Ever got a parking ticket you thought was like totally bogus? So you decide, all right, I'm going to fight this thing. You're hoping the judge will see reason and just toss it out, right? But then instead of that happening, you end up getting hit with like a reckless driving charge. Feels a bit unjust, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, that feeling of, hold on, I was just trying to exercise my rights here, is at the heart of what we call prosecutorial vindictiveness. It's when the legal system, and specifically prosecutors, seem to be using their power to punish someone, not for breaking the law, but for, for just defending themselves.
And that idea takes us right into today's deep dive, Blackledge v. Perry. So this Supreme Court case really tackles this very issue head on, and the outcome of this case has had like a ripple effect throughout the whole legal system, especially when it comes to plea bargains.
Absolutely. And you know what's fascinating about Blackledge v. Perry is it throws us right into this world of prison appeals and legal procedures. Our main character in the story, William Perry, was initially convicted of misdemeanor assault with a deadly weapon in a North Carolina district court. He felt like the conviction was wrong, and he decided, I'm going to appeal this.
Okay, so he's trying to clear his name totally within his rights. What happens next?
Well, this is where things get legally interesting. Perry's appeal meant that he was entitled to what's called a trial de novo in the Superior Court. So think of it like almost hitting the reset button on the case, not just a review of the old trial, but like a brand new, fresh start.
So by appealing, Perry was actually taking a chance. It wasn't just like a guaranteed path to overturning his conviction, right?
Right, exactly. And in Perry's case, the stakes got even higher. Before this new trial even began, the prosecutor decided to bring a felony charge against Perry for the same incident. Now we're talking assault with a deadly weapon with intent to kill, a much more serious offense than the original misdemeanor charge, and obviously could carry a much longer sentence.
Whoa, talk about a legal catch-22. It almost feels like he's being punished for appealing in the first place.
That's exactly the issue the Supreme Court had to grapple with in this case. They had to decide, firstly, if the prosecutor's actions violated Perry's due process rights. Due process is basically the guarantee that you'll be treated fairly by the legal system.
So was Perry denied due process? Seems pretty clear-cut to me.
Well, it gets a bit more complicated. See, Perry ended up pleading guilty to the felony charge. So the second question the court had to think about was, does that guilty plea automatically mean he loses the right to challenge the way he was treated by the prosecutor?
It's tricky, right?
Okay, so two big questions about fairness and the right to a fair trial. This is where the Supreme Court steps in. What did they decide? Well, the Supreme Court, led by Justice Potter Stewart in this case, ultimately sided with Perry. And their reasoning was they found that prosecutors can't up the ante with a more serious charge just because someone chooses to appeal.
It's like playing legal whack-a-mole. Every time you try to exercise your right to appeal, bam, a bigger charge appears.
Exactly. And the court really saw this as a huge threat to the entire justice system. If people are too afraid to appeal because they might face even harsher consequences, the whole system breaks down.
It would create a chilling effect. Yeah, imagine like this, you're considering appealing a speeding ticket, then you hear about someone who did the same thing and they got slapped with a reckless driving charge. You might think twice about appealing, even if you believe you're innocent, right?
That's the chilling effect in action. And the Supreme Court in Blackledge made it crystal clear prosecutors can't use their power to basically bully people out of exercising their rights.
So a victory for Perry and arguably a victory for anyone who might find themselves in a similar situation. But I'm guessing there was another side to this legal story. Weren't there justices who disagreed with this decision?
Oh, absolutely. You're right. There was a dissenting opinion in this case written by Justice William Rehnquist. And he agreed that, prosecutorial vindictiveness is a real problem. But he worried that the majority opinion went a little too far.
Okay, so Rehnquist wasn't exactly on board with the whole whack-a-mole analogy we were using earlier. What were his concerns?
Well, he argued that, this majority opinion could actually tie prosecutors' hands too tightly. He felt that prosecutors need to have at least some level of flexibility in how they handle cases,
So was Rehnquist basically saying, let's give prosecutors the benefit of the doubt?
Well, not exactly. I think it's more nuanced than that. He wasn't condoning vindictive behavior, but he was definitely worried about creating a system where prosecutors are constantly like second guessing themselves, afraid to make any changes to charges, for fear of being accused of retaliation.
That makes sense. It's all about striking a balance, right? Protecting the rights of defendants, but also recognizing that prosecutors need to be able to do their jobs effectively.
Precisely. And this is a debate that continues even today. Some legal experts will argue that Blackledge just went too too far, creating a standard for prosecutors that's just way too burdensome, and others believe it was a necessary step to really safeguard the integrity of the appeal process.
It's fascinating how even a landmark Supreme Court case can generate such debate for so long. But let's step outside the courtroom for a second. How did Blackledge v. Perry actually impact the legal landscape? I'm really curious about its influence on plea bargaining.
That's a great question, and it's where this idea of the apprehension of vindictiveness standard comes in, and this is a direct result of the Blackledge decision.
Okay, break that down for me. Apprehension of vindictiveness sounds kind of intimidating.
Think of it this way. The court recognized that even the appearance of vindictiveness can be enough to chill someone's right to appeal right. So it's not just about proving like actual malicious intent from the prosecutor. It's about ensuring that the whole process is free from even a hint of unfairness.
So it's not just about whether the prosecutor is actually being vindictive, but whether their actions could reasonably create a fear of retaliation.
Exactly. And this standard has had a huge impact on the way plea bargains are handled. Let's say you're facing criminal charges and the prosecutor offers you a plea deal, you know, and you're weighing your options. Do I take the deal and plead guilty to a lesser charge, or do I go to trial and risk a harsher sentence if I lose?
That's a tough call. I imagine it's something many people find themselves facing.
Absolutely. And now, because of Blackledge, prosecutors have to be very careful during these plea bargain negotiations. They can't use the threat of more serious charges as a way to pressure someone into accepting a plea deal.
So a prosecutor can't say something like, hey, take this deal or I'll throw the book at you?
Right. Exactly. That kind of statement would raise serious red flags. You know, it would create that apprehension of vindictiveness we were talking about. The goal is to make sure plea bargains are truly voluntary, not coerced, that the defendant feels like they're making a choice without this undue pressure.
So what can prosecutors do during these plea bargain negotiations? If they can't mention harsher charges, like, what tools do they have left?
Well, they can and often do explain the potential consequences of going to trial. You know, they might say something like, if you choose to go to trial, you need to understand that you could be facing a significantly longer sentence if the jury finds you guilty.
Okay, so they're not making a threat, but they're laying out the reality of the situation.
Exactly. It's a delicate balance. The prosecutor needs to present the facts and potential outcomes clearly and honestly, without crossing that line and seeming like they're trying to punish the defendant, you know, for choosing to exercise the right to a trial.
Sounds like walking a tightrope. One wrong step, and the whole case could be thrown into question.
That's why Blackledge has had such a big impact on the way both prosecutors and defense attorneys approach their jobs. It's a constant reminder that the pursuit of justice, you know, requires this delicate balancing act.
So it's not just about winning or losing, but about maintaining the integrity of the system itself.
Precisely. Blackledge v. Perry really serves as this safeguard, making sure the power of the prosecution is used responsibly and that the rights of defendants are respected throughout the legal process.
I'm sure even with this safeguard in place, there are still tons of legal battles over the finer points of prosecutorial vindictiveness. Have there been other cases that built on or clarified the principles from Blackledge?
Absolutely. The legal landscape is constantly changing, and Blackledge was just the beginning of a really long and complex conversation.
Well, let's dive into those other cases then. I'm ready to go even deeper into this fascinating legal territory. What other landmark decisions have dealt with this whole issue of prosecutorial power and the rights of defendants?
Well, one case that really pushed this whole conversation forward is United States v. Goodwin. This case took Blackledge's core principle, protecting against even the appearance of retaliation, remember, and applied it to plea bargains.
So we're talking about that same chilling effect we talked about before, but now, like, in the context of plea negotiations.
Exactly. The court in Goodwin basically said, look, we can't have a system where defendants are feeling pressured to accept plea deals just because they're afraid of, you know, what the prosecutor might do if they decide to go to trial.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
But wasn't there already a concern that Blackledge, you know, tied prosecutors' hands too tightly? Didn't Goodwin just make things even harder for them?
Yeah, it's a valid question. And Justice Rehnquist, who you'll remember dissented in Blackledge, actually wrote the majority opinion in Goodwin.
Wow. That's interesting. So even though he had those concerns about Blackledge, he still saw the need to protect against vindictiveness in plea bargains.
Mm. Yeah, and what's really fascinating at Goodwin is it didn't completely shut the door on prosecutors changing charges during plea negotiations. It established a kind of presumption of vindictiveness when charges are increased after a defendant decides to go to trial. But it also acknowledged that there are times when a prosecutor might have legitimate reasons for doing so.
Okay, so it's not like an absolute ban. What's an example of a situation where, like, increasing the charges might actually be justified?
Sure. Let's say during the discovery process, that's where both sides are exchanging evidence. You know, new information comes to light that reveals the defendant's actions were more serious than initially thought. Or maybe some witnesses come forward with, you know, new testimony that kind of changes the whole picture of the case.
So in those cases, it's not about punishing the defendant for choosing to go to trial. It's about responding to new evidence that's come up.
Right, exactly. The key takeaway from Goodwin is that the prosecutor's decision has to be based on something concrete, something that genuinely warrants those increased charges. It can't just be like a knee-jerk reaction to the defendant's decision to exercise their rights.
This is where things get really nuanced, right? It must be so tricky for both prosecutors and defense attorneys to navigate this line between legitimate charging decisions and, you know, potential vindictiveness.
It absolutely is. And that's why cases like Blackledge and Goodwin are so important. They really force us to think critically about this balance of power in the criminal justice system. And they provide a framework, you know, for making sure that everyone involved, defendants, prosecutors, judges, everyone is operating within the bounds of fairness and due process.
So it's not just about protecting the rights of the accused. It's about upholding the integrity of the whole system.
Exactly. If people lose faith in the system, if they believe it's rigged or biased against them, the entire foundation of the rule of law, you know, really starts to crumble.
It makes you realize that every legal decision, every case, has these ripple effects that go way beyond the courtroom.
That's the power of precedent, right? One case can set the stage for a whole wave of new legal challenges and reinterpretations, and that's what we've seen with Blackledge v. Perry.
It's amazing how one man's fight for a fair shake has had such a lasting impact on, you know, the way justice is carried out in this country.
And it's a reminder that the pursuit of justice is an ongoing process. It requires us to be constantly vigilant, you know, a willingness to challenge the way things are and a commitment to making sure that the system is actually serving its purpose, protecting individual rights while upholding the rule of law.
Well said. I think we've done a pretty thorough deep dive today into Blackledge v. Perry and its legacy. You know, we've explored the facts of the case, the Supreme Court's decision, the dissenting opinions, the impact it's had on plea bargaining, and just the legal landscape as a whole.
And hopefully our listeners now have a much deeper understanding of this really complex issue.
Absolutely. We've seen how this case has, you know, sparked these ongoing debates about the balance of power in the criminal justice system. And those debates are still going on today. It's a reminder that the law isn't just some static set of rules. You know, it's a dynamic process that's always reflecting these evolving values and priorities of society.
It's a conversation that I think we all need to be a part of, for sure.
So to anyone listening who wants to learn more, we encourage you to dig deeper into the case law. You know, read the opinions of legal scholars and just really think about where you stand on this fascinating and constantly evolving issue of prosecutorial vindictiveness. Because ultimately, the pursuit of justice is something we're all responsible for.
Well, that brings us to the end of our deep dive today into Blackledge v. Perry. I hope you found this little journey through the legal landscape as enlightening as I have.
And to our listeners, we always appreciate you joining us for these deep dives. Until next time, stay curious, stay engaged, and keep those legal minds sharp.